This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 190. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691,
and you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Welcome to the show, Garrus. Burners live on the show this week, but he's going to be coming up a little bit later.
Oh, excellent. Well, it's good to hear from him always, even if he is on a slight delay.
Yeah, I've lost track of where he is in the world. I think we'll find out later in the show when I give him a call. But I think he's in Dubai at the moment. So he's been traversing the world on the Pitch Vision mission. So we'll find out exactly what exciting things he's been getting up to a little bit later on. But what have you been doing? What's been your week like?
Well, we're preparing for our last couple of days before we go off to Dubai. We leave on the 7th, next Thursday, on a cricket tour. We've got 23 cricketers going out and playing at all the test grounds over in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And the other thing I'm doing is before we go out on that tour, I'll join him a couple of days late because I'm doing level 4 interviews. So interviewing, I think we've got 16 candidates from the most recent cohort going through and being grilled at the end of their 2-year journey through the level 4.
All right. OK, so that's a tense time for those guys then.
Yeah, they've been through the mill, really, in terms of their assignments. But they've got to put a portfolio in that should have been in last week, I'm sure. They all managed to do that, which is, I think, 8,000 words about their journey that they've gone through in level 4 over the previous 2 years of the course. And then they come in and present in front of 12 of us, so-called experts, and they present for 45 minutes and then break out into two groups, which is an advanced coaching skills group, which is sort of sports science and some of the language patterns and the things like Myers-Briggs and all of those sort of things in that room. And then my room, which is biomechanics, fast bowling, batting, fielding, slow bowling, and wicketkeeping. So I'm doing two of those, which is fielding and wicketkeeping.
Speaking of fast bowling, you mentioned there, I've been doing some background work on Ian Ponce's new book, Ultimate Pace Secrets.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've managed to catch up with it yet, but it's an extremely detailed document of fast bowling. I guess biomechanics is the modern word, technique you could say, but it's a lot of information to take in, and it's golden.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he's proven to be an exceptional bowling coach, hasn't he? I think one of the big shames is he hasn't necessarily done much work over in England. A lot of his work has been done in Bangladesh and overseas. It would be fantastic to see more of him working in England with some high quality bowlers, because he's got some very interesting ideas, Ian Ponce.
Definitely has. And if you want to catch up with Ian's book, then we're going to be publishing the online version of it very shortly. So keep your ear close to the ground for that when that comes out. Ultimate Pace Secrets. It's certainly the most detailed technical manual on fast bowling I've ever seen. If you're looking for that, if you're looking for a fast bowling technical manual and you want to completely geek out about, you know, the four tent pegs and the four commitments to bowl and drop stepping and front foot blocking, then Ian Ponce's book is the way to go. But enough of that, because we're going to catch up a little bit now with Berners. I am going to get him on the phone and we're going to have a little chat and we're going to see what he's getting up to. So let's see if we can catch him now.
Hello?
Berners, it's David.
Coach, how are you?
Yes, good. We've been missing you on the show, so I thought I'd give you a ring and get an update on where you've been and where you're going and where you are at the moment.
Currently cooking up a sandstorm. I'm in Dubai for the Rugby Sevens. So we've come up with quite a novel way to integrate cricket into rugby. And we've got a passing technology out there at the moment, which HSBC are going to be using at the Rugby Sevens. So we're tracking the pace and the accuracy of fans' passes that are in the stadium. So it's all good fun. And just on my way back from Mumbai, where I managed to grab a little bit of the second test, so that was good. And also some interesting bits and pieces with the BCCI and various bits and bobs of pitch vision that are very exciting as well.
Yeah, so have you been, is it been PV1 that's been exciting people out in India?
Yep, absolutely. Just kind of like the ease and simplicity of it. We appeared in a couple of the newspapers, so the Kolkata Press ran a news item on us, and their management team actually gave the system quite good praise due to the fact that they're often on the road and the ease and convenience of what they saw it, being used as with its core benefits before a game or, very quickly before playing against a key opponent where bowlers might have to settle into a certain line and length against them. So that was really nice, and then spent a couple of days at the test match and made some good inroads into the BCCI. So looking to get it into their zonal academies. They've got three zonal academies over there, which basically cover the 27 states. So the nucleus of all the best players in India are somewhere between those three academies, and we're just on the verge of getting three systems out there and into those academies so they can start to use a kind of standard protocol to monitor these players as they go back to their various states and then intermittently come back into the academy. So if they haven't seen a player for maybe 2 months, they can very quickly have a look at his data, have a look at his videos, and maybe compare and contrast that with what he's doing currently. So yeah, quite an intriguing setup possibly over there in India at the top end.
I guess with so much competition for places, so many players, so many academies, so many people desperate to make it to the top level, it's little differentiators like pitch vision that are going to make all the difference to people who have the passion and the knowledge.
Correct, yeah. And I mean, they don't see the players, they don't have hands on as much as they would like. So, those time spans between training sessions, who holds the data? Where were we last time they came? What were we working on? So essentially we can kind of box that all up, create a profile for each player. And of course that can be viewed remotely as well by the state coaches. So the whole kind of communication channels and the approach can become slightly streamlined, and they can all be working off the same hymn sheet. So having the system as standard in all of those academies and then filtering it down into the states means that they suddenly get vast amounts of data, vast amounts of knowledge about these players when, possibly they're not in their environment the whole time. So, a great tool, especially in a country like India, which is so huge in its land space. So it means that we can suddenly start to squeeze it all in and view a lot of data from one seat in one office.
Well, fascinating stuff, Berners, and enjoy the rest of your rugby relationship. And hopefully, we'll get you back on the show next week for a triumphant return.
I will. It's not all rugby. I will be dropping into the Global Academy on Monday. They've also got our system. We've got the Dutch boys in town at the moment, so going to go through and put a few of their fast bowlers through their paces. Got a couple of video cameras, so hopefully get some good video footage and some good data to bolt on the back of it.
Great. Well, catch up with you soon, Berners. Cheers.
Cheers, coach.
Okay, so that's Berners off into the stratosphere to carry on with his important work, and we're going to head off into the yes no round, and I will do the honours with the questions this week, seeing as Berners is tied up elsewhere. And Gareth, if you can give me just a yes or a no answer, no matter how much more detail you want to go into, and then I'll give you my thought immediately afterwards. Okay, so the first question. It's better to be really good at one thing than average at many things.
Yes.
Yes. Question two. Maidens create wickets.
No.
Yes. Question three. India chose the wrong strategy in the home loss against England.
No.
No. Okay, we're going to have a interview again this week, and our intrepid reporter Martin Gleeson of Cricket India Academy is in Kabul again, and he's got an interview lined up for us, which should be equally as interesting as his previous work. So over to you, Martin, and we'll find out what he's been up to in Kabul.
Martin Gleeson here from Cricket India Academy, currently in Kabul, Afghanistan for a level one coach education program, and currently at the Kabul International Cricket Stadium here with Rhys Ahmadzai, who is the chief selector of the Afghanistan Cricket Board. The focus for our visit is a coach education program with working with coaches and also teachers. How's it been going so far?
I think that was a good experience, and the best thing is that the teacher is here, so they will learn a lot, and they will be work with the school boys and the coaches from ECB. They will be working in the different provinces, and so I'm sure in the future we will be wait for the result. When I was talking to everyone, so they learn a lot, and they will say that we never heard these kind of things before.
And now, once a program such as this is finished, is there plans to do more of these sort of coaching activities?
Yeah, we not want to stop them too. We just finish up to the level one. We want to promote them, and we will be see interest of the coaches. Like as I was said, that we when I saw some of the coaches, most of them is I think they are very good, because this is the first time of some of the coaches which is they are listening these kind of things, and so because they never had experience of the coaching before, they were just play cricket, and coaching is a different knowledge. If you play lots of cricket, but if you have no knowledge of coaching, it's very hard that you should train the kids.
So the national team progress, maybe the World 2020 in Sri Lanka wasn't as good an experience. Did the team perform below expectations, or do you think that's about where they are at the moment?
As a cricketer, I would say that before the tournament, we will be just show to the world that we are not is a weak team. We qualify for the World Cup, and my expectation was that we will play a good cricket. I was not expected that we will win for the World Cup. My expectation was that we will play very well, and the expert of cricketer and the ICC should think about that we spend lots of money on Afghanistan cricket, so, and they are playing in the national level. So we was played that we should be mentioned like 180%, like we play a very good match against India. And from 2010, our team was much better. We have lots of problems now. Still, we have problems because of black facility in Afghanistan. But our team is very good, and they are when we are playing regular matches with the top nation, with the test country. So I'm sure the time will come after 2 or 3 years that we will be beating 2020 some of the test country, and then one day matches. But if you someone is asked from me is that when you guys will be play a test cricket. Test cricket, we have at least in my experience we have 10 or 15 years, and then we will be, because we need our strong domestic cricket, good structure by the cricket, and we need to this is the time that we should work from the school level, and we need to strong our club level cricket, and then our provincial team, and then we and so that's why this coaching course is very good, which is they will work in the different provinces with the school kids. So from these, after 15 or 20, 10 or 15 years, when these guys will come out, so they will have much experience. So then we will be to play a first-class test cricket.
The domestic cricket structure is improving, and that's developing along as well.
Yeah, we are still learning, and we are taking. It was a good experience. From year to year, we will bringing lots of different changes, and now we will be think and we will be organize our domestic matches when our star players is available. So we will be divide them in the different provinces. At least from each province's team, our 2 or 3 national players will be participating. So for our new guys, they will be think that how should I pace one of the star fast bowlers like Hamid Hassan Shahpur, how to play against him, and so the domestic bowlers will be think that how should I bowl to Muhammad Nabi or Muhammad Shehzad or to other guy. So they will be learn like when especially it's very hard for me when I'm selecting players from domestic cricket, when I'm seeing these domestic players in the national team camp, they are looks totally different from each other, because the national team is much mature, and these guys are totally new, so they have no understanding. They are thinking totally different, and body behavior is totally different. So that's why we need to organize a tournament when our national team is free, when our under 19 team is free. So then we will divide them all of the star players in different provinces. So I'm sure then, and if someone is performed well against our national good bowlers, and some of the bowlers was make trouble for our national player batsmen, so then we will be selected, and then they will be not feeling like if someone is new in the team. So the balance will be improved, like when I'm seeing the Australian domestic cricket, all of the stars participating in the tournament, and when I'm seeing the English domestic cricket. So we are learning after every tournament. So I'm sure we will be work more on it to improve our domestic cricket.
It's time now for us to answer your questions on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and we have a couple of mailbag questions here. The best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, and you can find out more about that if you head over to the website. But the two questions this week are from a couple of excitable people who want to make some improvements, and I'm going to be reading out the questions. So, Gareth, if you can be poised with your answers, and maybe we can go back and forth and get the discussion going. First question is from Varun. And Varun says, "Hello, sir. Our academy coach tells us to throw directly into the hands of the keeper, whereas we see on television the wicketkeepers demand the fielders throw one bounce to them. Which of the above techniques should we prefer and why?"
Yeah, I mean, we do see that on television, don't we? That people throw the ball into the ground, but they don't do it all of the time. And the advantage that they have is that often on television, you've got people with great pace. And I say that because one of the tactics of throwing the ball into the ground is to get the ball a bit scuffed up, and to get it into a condition where you can get the ball to reverse swing. And in order to reverse swing, the scientists, the NASA scientists and the cabal coaches out there tell me that they need to be bowling in excess of 80 to 85 miles an hour. So obviously with youth cricket and most club cricket not having people of that pace, the ball is encouraged to stay up in the air, so you can work on conventional swing. It can happen at much lower paces that we see on a regular basis in normal club matches. So if you keep the ball up, then obviously you can keep that conventional shine on the ball, whereas when the likes of Jimmy Anderson and Dale Steyn and others are bowling, they're operating around the 90 mile an hour mark and above 85 miles an hour. And when the ball stops conventionally swinging, then you get the ball into the ground, you scuff it up, and you work on a small piece of shine and get one side really, really scuffed up. And then the ball will trip in the air. It will react differently in the air, and the shiny side will start to move in a different fashion to conventional swing. And you can only do that really if you get the ball scuffed up. So that's why people throw it into the ground generally. The other reason why people throw it in the ground is to get the ball soft. And you see that in one day cricket in particular, where people are trying to hit the ball out of the ground on a regular basis, in 2020 cricket on a regular basis. And if you soften the ball, obviously the reaction off the bat's going to be lessened as well. So they're the two main reasons why do it in professional cricket. I would question how valid those reasons are in club cricket always, and particularly in relation to the conventional swing, which would generally happen at lesser speeds, which are associated with youth and club cricket that most of you guys that are listening to this show will be playing in.
If you've got a young player who perhaps that's another difference between the top level and the lower levels, is that throws generally aren't as good as either as accurate or as powerful. So if you've got a young player who maybe is looping his throw up because he's trying to get it in to the keeper without it bouncing, or he can kind of skid it in, what would you do? Would you try and work on the throw so it gets stronger, strong enough that he can throw it in on one throw, or would you find a compromise and he's skimming it in like you would skim a stone in?
I think it's really important to work on the basic mechanics of a throw to give people the option of getting it in from longer distances. particularly kids, because they'll try and get it in over longer distances and end up throwing their shoulder out or picking up injuries because they're forcing it rather than just letting their body go. So I'd always work on somebody to increase the power of their throw, definitely. In terms of skidding it in, obviously we need to have the surface to skid the ball in on. So English squares generally are a bit bigger, and obviously a square is harder than an outfield. So it enables us in England to skid the ball in because we're throwing a hard thing onto a hard thing and it will skip off the surface and get to the wicketkeeper a bit quicker. However, on a lot of the places that I've travelled to with cricket, you know, in the West Indies and in Australia, the blocks or the squares that they play the games of cricket on, they don't have so many of them, so will stick into it, so it won't skid off. So you've got lots of things to consider. If you're in England or if you're in big squares around the world, then yeah, use the square to your advantage to get the ball to skip off. But the first and foremost thing that I would always do with a young player is try to get their throw mechanics absolutely spot on, to give them maximal distance and maximal power from wherever they are on the ground.
Yeah, and that's also where, you know, working as a team comes in. If you've got a long throw and you've got younger players, then those relay throws come in more handy as well, then you're keeping the ball in the air, aren't you?
Yeah, and then relay throws I really like because you can do lots of things with relay throws. With a single throw, you can't change the direction of it, whereas with a relay throw, you can actually shift direction. So if there's a bit of confusion in the middle of a wicket or one guy's running faster than the other, then you can intercept the ball, which is going to the wicketkeeper, and get it to the bowler's end to complete a run out. So I'm a big fan of those sort of things, particularly in youth cricket, because they're generally played on grounds where the kids can't reach. I think it's a fantastic tactic to deploy, and something that Richard Housall, who's the England fielding coach, always talks about is fielding in pairs, whether you're chasing the ball out to the boundary or whether you're somebody who's waiting halfway so they can deliver the ball and effect a run out. So fielding in pairs is a good idea. And generally we talk about having six or seven people operating in one any given ball, either chasing the ball or going halfway to collect a relay throw or backing up. It's very important that as many people are involved in that any play, any ball as possible. Keeps everybody going, keeps the team working together, and it's fantastic spectacle to watch.
Yeah, exactly. But we've gone a bit away from it. But I think the short answer to Varun is get it into the gloves directly. So let's move on to the next question. It's from Razor, which I have an inkling Gareth might put a tick in the winners column. And Razor says, I have a 13-year-old son. He started playing cricket 3 years ago, and he started to play against a bowling machine recently. He's purely a front foot player with a nice check drive and a defence. His problem is the cut and the pull. Even if the ball is slow and short, he's not able to play the pull or the cut. And there's a big difference between his front foot and his back foot play. So what's the problem? How can it be rectified? And is he lacking hand-eye coordination?
Well, the chances are that it's not hand-eye coordination that is the issue, because it sounds to me as if his drive and his defence is already in good shape. So that's an indicator that actually his hand-eye coordination is good. And there's no reason why anybody, unless they've got a visual impairment, why their hand-eye coordination wouldn't be good. One of the things that we're doing a lot of research into now is stances and body shapes, and working within our natural way of operating rather than just copying somebody because they've been successful. And it sounds to me that your son here, Razor, is in a stance position which is either too wide or too narrow for him to actually move out of. So experiment with a wide stance, experiment with a narrow stance, and see which one enables him to move both forward and, in, as you say here, back in order to play the short balls. He's obviously stuck, and it's preventing him from getting onto the back foot and to play the cut and the pull, even at slow paces. If he's in a natural position that you establish through doing a bit of trials and, you know, a bit of testing to see which one works the best, finding out which one it is, if you get him into that natural position, then he will be able to move forward or back very, very easily, because you'll unlock him. Presently, he's locked up. And so, yeah, experiment with a wide base, experiment with a narrow base, and you'll find that one of those will work for you.
The thing that I was going to mention was, you mentioned the bowling machine. I'm just wondering if it's the, because we see this a lot, the classic case of the bowling machine guy who has done a lot of work on his front foot drives, and he's had a lot of balls fired at him to play those shots. And he's just starting to premeditate things a little bit now. And so he's looking for that, you know, that cover drive or the straight drive, so much so that he is blocking himself off by going forwards. Maybe he's got a trigger move where he moves his front foot across and he ends up in a locked out position where he finds it hard to be able to move back.
Yeah, well, that does happen, mate. You're absolutely right. And what, can you remember a few weeks ago I wrote an article about what you look at? Can you remember the, you know, watch the ball article that is on the coach education site? And this is really relevant to bowling machines, because obviously a bowling machine is a very narrow focused thing. So we're looking for a ball coming out of a small tube. So generally people who play well on bowling machines are the guys that have a very narrow focus rather than that broad focus, where a broad focus person will be picking up on the physical cues of a bowler, for example, a change in body shape. So without that change in body shape happening, it's very difficult for them to pick up the line and length and the speed of a ball in the way that they would do if a bowler was bowling at them. So generally your best players on bowling machines who make the best decisions are the guys who narrow down their focus. So what can we do on a bowling machine if we're operating a bowling machine? Well, something that I've started to do with the guys who like the broader focus, that like to pick up on visual cues, in order for them to get their timings right in their movements, their triggers, or even just when they're going to start to initiate their body movements in any way, shape or form, I will actually simulate the bowling action and bowl a ball. So place the ball with a bowling straight arm into the chute on a bowling machine. And that gives them a sense of timing, which is really, really important to those guys. So if you've got somebody who's struggling on a bowling machine to get into a rhythm of it, then start to simulate a bowling action when you're standing on your ladder or on the bowling machine itself, and bowl the ball into the chute of a bowling machine. And that will help them to get into the rhythm that they require to play that ball well.
I reckon every week, Gareth, there's something that you could just take that one thing that you say, and you could just not bother with listening to the rest of the show. I think that's probably the one for this week. So, I like your gems. I should collect these gems. I just end up taking a load of notes as we're talking. So that's just to blow a bit of smoke in a certain direction towards you. That was excellent.
Thank you very much.
So I think we'll leave it there.
So here we are. It's the time of a show where one of us gets to vent our spleen, to say what's on our mind, to get anything off of our chest. And this week, the soapbox, it's time for David.
Well, this week I'm going to steal something blatantly from Ian Pont, basically because I've been working on the e-version of Ian's fast bowling book, which is very exciting. And one of the things that Ian says, which I have seen myself as well with a lot of coaches, is simply that there's so much technical coaching done with batsmen. At the grassroots level, the young players, you know, they're all talking about foot position and elbow position, head position, balance, alignment, all those things. But yet, so many fast bowlers are left to their own devices because the coach hasn't got the confidence to make any changes to the action because they worry they're going to injure them, or they worry they're going to upset their natural action. That's not a problem that you get with batsmen. Batsmen are tinkered with all the time, but bowlers, there's hardly any tinkering. So although I know the two skills are different, but I think you can have a bit more confidence and do a bit more tinkering with your batsman's technique as well. Right, that's just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, a couple of little things. We're going to finish off with the tail ender in a moment. But before we do that, we're going to have a competition winner. The best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Varun, and we had, of course, the magnificently named Razor.
Well, you're probably not going to be surprised, but I'm going to go for Razor this week. However, it's not because of the name this week. Both were excellent questions, and we both went off on our usual tangents, which always tells us that the question's been fantastic. But because you gave me a compliment after I gave my answer to Razor's question, I'm going to go with that because I like being made to feel good, and Razor's question helped that happen.
Well, there we go, exactly. So congratulations, Razor, on so many levels, your name being one of the good ones. If you want to get in touch with the show, Gareth, how would somebody email us and phone us?
Well, on email, we'd be coach@pitvision.com. On the phone, we are 0208 816 7691.
Yes, indeed. Those are the that is the UK number, but there's also international numbers. You can find those on the website. It's an answering machine, so you can phone us 24/7. You can also get us through Twitter, which is @PVCricketCoach. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. And you can subscribe to the show in iTunes by doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. If you don't use iTunes for any particular reason, then head over to pitchvision.com, do a search for the podcast link at the top, and all the details on getting the RSS feed are in there. Just before we head off back into the internet, we have our tail ender, and I found a couple of tail enders. I'm not going to lie, I found them on the internet, and they reminded me of a couple. This is one of them. It was originally a slightly different one, but I thought, that doesn't quite seem to be what I think it is. And on further Googling, it was something extremely rude. So the over 18 version, I'll tell you what that is, Gareth. But this week's tail ender is budgies, which I hadn't heard before.
Oh, I have, and a lot of it related to my batting, to be honest, and the budgies that would go around in my mind when I was batting, worrying about this, that, and what everybody thought of me and all sorts. So I can relate to budgies, mate.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to having budgies in their mind, the doubts, particularly batsmen, I think, because you only get that one chance, don't you? And if you're playing club cricket and it rains, you could go 3 weeks having one bat. So no wonder batsmen are such stressed out individuals.
Well, I've got a great one on this. My one of my work colleagues, Mr. Richard Ellison, who obviously played for England and Kent and did a fantastic job of winning the Ashes 1 year back in 1985. We played against each other 3 times, and he managed to get me out 3 times in those 3 games that we played against each other, and I think I played about 10 balls from him in those 3 innings. So not a bad strike rate for Mr. Ellison against Mr. Garraway, but I definitely had budgies as he was running into bowl, that is for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully this show is helping batsmen all over the world get rid of their budgies. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, coach.